Welcome to PR360, where every week the brightest minds in public relations, communications, and media discuss the topics and trends you need to know about. PR360 was produced in partnership with Global Results Communications. Now here's your host, Todd Perry.
Welcome back to PR360. My guest today is Juan Alanis, the CEO and founder of Big Oak Tree Media in Houston, Texas. Big Oak Tree Media is an award-winning agency with more than 30 years of combined history in marketing and communications. Juan is also the middle child of seven in a first-generation Mexican-American family with Texas roots. He's also the host of the In the Business podcast with his wife, Angelica Cazares, and the executive producer of the Latina Leadership podcast. So thank you so much. Is there anything I missed, Juan?
No, I think that you summed it up pretty briefly. That's great. Thank you.
Good. No problem. I would wonder, in a family of seven, and obviously all families are different, is being the middle child like being completely invisible? Or how does that work out?
In my case, it's kind of being in the middle of everything. So I don't know if it's just my personality or, you know, the fact that I just was curious, but I always seem to find myself in the middle of, you know, a lot of different situations. You know, as a kid, I my sisters would tell you stories that, oh my God, he was such a nuisance. This kid, he was like always, he was a menace to us. And then I think later on in life, I mean, it was just like, oh, you know, at one point in my life, I was a go-to person where, you know, something was happening and my family members would reach out to me. Hey, Juan, we want to tell you about this. We want to talk to you about this. And, you know, needless to say that can get a little challenging to deal with on a regular basis.
But, you know, that's the greatest lesson to learn for future success. I think there was an interview with Barack Obama. And they said, you know, for people starting out, he was speaking to young people, said people starting out in whatever they do, like, what would you teach them in order to get ahead? And he goes, be the go-to person. He goes, you know, even if you're the young person in the office, whatever, you're the person that gets stuff done. Nobody has to worry about it. You deliver. I got that. Don't worry about it. And he says, those are the people that end up doing well in life, and because everybody can rely on them. So maybe that's who you were in the family.
I think about it as like I was definitely empathetic from a very young age. I think I was very empathetic in a lot of different ways, to hearing people out, to listening to challenges. Which you're right. I mean, now that's part of what I do on a regular basis, because when I'm working with clients, you know, I'm listening to their pain points. I'm talking to them about things, like problems that they're having, and how they can be resolved. And I'm being patient, having a patient ear to really, you know, not only listen to my clients, but also listen to my team, and also try to build both, you know, in terms of building our team and also building the work that we're doing. But I think those are characteristics that were, I would say, innate in me, you know, from a very young age. I don't know if that was just because my personality or the way that I grew up, or maybe it was the fact that I was a middle child and I kind of was like, you know, seeing, you know, what my older siblings were going to, and then what my younger siblings were going to. And so I think it was a combination of all of those things that really kind of made me become the adult and the business owner that I am today.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, there's nothing more important when working with clients is to listen to them and make them feel heard, right? That's got to be one of the biggest complaints is my agency isn't listening to me, you know?
Well, we've had the good fortune, and I think that what I've found, you know, from the very beginning when we started our agency is that clients sought me out. You know, they would seek out to speak to me, even though, you know, I was not the only person at the agency. But I think they sought me out because I always made it I was very intentional, I would say, in terms of understanding that, you know, when you're hired as a consultant, you're hired for the purpose of being able to troubleshoot and being able to listen and being able to offer solutions that, you know, maybe are a little bit outside of the box. Mm-hmm. Or being what we like to say within our agencies that we're very enterprising. You know, I started as a kid, my first job, I was selling newspapers outside of grocery stores at 10 years old. So I consider myself a very enterprising person. You know, I've always been that way. It took me a while to understand that, you know, but mm-hmm. you know, once I did, I was really able to embrace that. And I think when I realized that people were gravitating towards me when they had issues or when they had, you know, situations they needed attention, I embraced it. I embraced the fact that, you know, just for whatever reason or not, I mean, I don't have all the answers. I don't want to make it seem like I'm this guru that has all the answers, because I'm not. But I'm always willing to seek out the advice that I need from others to help me address a solution. So I'm a good person that can help to alleviate by working with a team, by working with people I know, building across my network and saying, hey, here's something that myself or a client is dealing with. Let's talk about it. Let's find a solution. Let's think about, you know, some things that we could possibly do. And I think that's something that, you know, developed over time, but I think also something that I just am have a one of those gifts. I think some people talk about the gifts that they're given. Yeah. I feel like that's a gift that I have, that I'm able to be a little bit more level-headed and think about things in a different way.
That's great. Let's get in a little bit to what you do over at Big Oak Tree. A big part of what you guys do is you help market to diverse audiences. So what is the one big thing that marketers get wrong when they're trying to speak to, say, you know, a Latino audience or a African-American audience? Or what's one thing that people aren't getting right that you see out in the media?
You know, I think I'll say that the challenge that sometimes we encounter is that there's so much diversity, even within diverse communities. Yeah. And I think sometimes not being able to navigate that or understand, you know, the nuances that, you know, being from one region or one ethnicity or one region of the country in the U.S., like, for example, like if we talk about Texas, when we talk about, you know, Texas Latinos versus New York Latinos or California Latinos, even, you know, we talk about the Asian communities, there are differences just because, you know, there's history there, the heritage that's come from those communities. So I think sometimes we tend to want to generalize, you know, a particular demographic and say, oh, you know what, we're talking to the African-American community, this is the way we need to talk to them. If we're talking to Latinos, this is the way we need to talk to them, and that's the be-all, end-all, when in reality it isn't. A lot of times people, you know, there are very small differences, but those small differences make a huge difference. So I think it's, you know, and it's understanding those differences and speaking to people, I would say with them, rather than speaking, you know, at them and saying like, oh, this is a campaign for you, this is a project we're doing for you. It's more like, okay, no, tell us what it is that you're looking, what do you care about? Taking the time to kind of understand what it is that community cares about, and then being able to build around those, you know, those sweet spots that I like to say, those are sweet spots that you can build around, but build around them in a very authentic way, not just say, oh, you know, you like Mexican food, let's just bring tacos.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. It's a little more in-depth.
We're not
going
to be against them. We're going to enjoy them, and we're going to be happy for them. But, you know, there has to be a little bit more substance than just, you know, doing something that's so in your face.
So to talk specifically about the Latino market and someone in Texas, if you were designing a campaign, what are some of the specifics that you would address when talking specifically? I'm saying specifically a whole lot when talking to that base versus a general market. What, you know, how do you kind of slant the message so that it lands and it's interpreted and, you know,
I think there's definitely, you know. Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's definitely a Texas twist that you need to put on that campaign, because as Texans, we're very proud of being Texan. And I think any Texan you meet, whether they're Latino or not, you're going to find that they're very proud of being a Texan. So I think you got to have to lean into that, you know. And then I think also understanding that there are so many generations of Latinos in Texas. And I mean, some might argue that, you know, before Texas was Mexico, before it was the United States. So, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's always been Latino. So I think, you know, I think that plays a role, you know, in understanding, you know, that history, that sense of pride, that sense of ownership that you have of being a part of this community. But then it also, like, you know, takes into account, you know, what are the people that are locally matter, the things that locally, culturally we care about that are very ours. So it could be like, you know, we're very proud of our, I'm in Houston, so I'm partial, so I know that my fellow Texans are probably not going to agree with me, but we're very proud of our Houston Astros.
Oh, no. So as a Dodger fan, this is very tough. This is very tough. But we'll...
So, I mean, that's a big, like, and that's a good sweet spot. You know, I think we're talking about Houston Latinos, I think, and the Houston Latinos and the Houston Astros, they share a very, deep connection. So I think tapping into that, and so that's not a very Latino thing. That's more of a broad general market thing, like the sports team that belongs to a city. But at the same time, because the city is so Hispanic, there's a very deep connection between the team and the population that supports it, the fans that support it. I won't say predominantly, but a large part of the fans are Hispanic.
Yeah, that's a very similar thing, like here in LA with the Dodgers. Is that you go to a baseball game and probably half the people in the audience are Hispanic, and the stadium is located in a traditionally Hispanic neighborhood. You had Fernando Valenzuela, so it's just a big part of the brand of the team is just so connected with it. It's inseparable, to what it means to be in LA, and I guess the same exact thing in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, and I think there's a different way that you celebrate as a Latino than anybody else. But I think, even when you think about, now, I think there was a big excitement around Beyonce and the new music that she's doing that's, I would say very Texas-rooted, where she's going into country music, and it's, people around the rodeo were talking about it. So I think I feel like that's a good example too, because it's connected to a very something that's very mainstream, but it's also there's also very Texas ties that make it feel like our own. So I think it's when something feels like it's part of you or like it's part of your culture, that's an area that you can lean into, tap into, and build from to whatever campaign that you're looking to do.
So a big, I guess, buzzword, but That cheapens it, but a big kind of term that everyone's throwing around to me when I'm doing the show is the importance of authenticity in a message. And, people are bombarded by so much stuff today. It used to be just, you saw a lot of TV commercials and some ads on a bus bench. And now, now it's everywhere. You've got influencers, the whole palette has expanded. How do you cut through and seem authentic in this world where people are very, very skeptical?
I think that's a great point, because I purposely try to stay away from using that word too much, just because I feel it's like, at this point, it's a little bit of noise, like white noise. That when you say that, it's like, does it really mean anything?
Yeah.
Or is it just like the word you throw around? So I think, repeat the question for me, because I just lost my train of thought there. But
yeah, no problem. How do you make sure that you're delivering an authentic message, or shoot for authenticity in your communications?
Well, I think it's having diverse team members that are either within your team or who you can work with to build that plan. Because I think it matters, if the people within the team building this program actually understand the campaign that's being built, not to say that it has to be a diverse team that puts it together, but if it's not, then I think taking the time to building sort of a focus group of sorts with diverse community members that you can say, hey, does this resonate with you or does it not? Is this like coming through as what we think it's coming through? Because on our end, we're planning and we have our creatives and everything, and we're thinking that this is like, oh man, we've just hit like this really amazing campaign. We're doing it. This is going to be awesome. And then when you have somebody in the room that comes in and they're looking at it from a different vantage point, they might say, it kind of misses the mark a little bit. It's not really hitting where it's supposed to. You can see countless campaigns out there that do that, where you're like, oh man, it looks like nobody, they didn't take the time to really do the research to really figure out, does this resonate with this community? Especially when we think about it again, to the point of, this one effort is going to work across the board for all the different demographics across the U.S. So like the different sub-segments of a particular market, if we're talking about the Latino market, saying like, oh, it's going to work in Texas, it's going to work in New York, it's going to work in California. It may, but there may be little things that those communities in those different areas might not resonate with. They might say, well, that doesn't really speak to me. And so that makes the campaign a little bit less effective.
It was one guy I was talking to on this show. It was a director of social media for some big clients. And he had a funny take. He goes, you know, we create the content and then we step back and I think to myself, would a 15-year-old make fun of this? And if a 15-year-old makes fun of it because teenagers, they have a nonsense detector and can pick stuff out when I think even when they get older, they just get so used to the nonsense that they're just judging it on, well, this is better nonsense than the other nonsense, right? But a 15-year-old's like, no, that's get that out of here. It's no good.
Yeah, that's so true. And I mean, I think we referenced the influencer community at the beginning of the conversation. And I mean, if you look at the influencer community, it's shifted quite a bit in the last few years, I would say, even very recently, where it used to be quite acceptable for people to put out branded content that was very clearly branded, and people were very accepting of that as a whole, you know, in terms of us like consuming content on our devices, like we were very comfortable with that. Mm. I think less and less people are willing to put up with that. People are just tired of it. They're like, no, we don't want to see, you know, something that a soap company, you know, sponsored for you and you got to go on this trip. Well, great for you, but that doesn't really speak to me. You know, for me as an individual, it doesn't connect to the things that I care about. Where as opposed to if a company, you know, for example, with Black Lives Matter, so many different corporations were able to really step up and talk in an honest way and say, hey, we see you, we care about this too. I think that mattered so much more for people. And so I think there's been a shift from mm-hmm. a consumer standpoint where people aren't willing to put up with you know, the inauthentic as much as they used to before because it was new. And so we were learning, we were kind of getting used to it. Now people know what they like and what they don't like, and they're not willing to put up with it.
Very good. Let's see, recently Big Oak Tree Media put out a fun video on LinkedIn about social media marketing that had a bunch of great tips. And I always think that this show is doing its best when we have specific, granular information that people can take away. In your opinion, what makes a successful social media post?
I think that it engages with the people you're trying to engage with. So I feel like often with social media, we get into this... we get so concerned about the algorithm and, you know, the formula that's right now. And if you know anything about social media, the formula that's right now is probably not going to be right tomorrow. So you can learn the formula and practice it over and over. You can take these courses and you know, learn the best. But the likelihood is that by the time you really get good at it, it's shifted. It's changed again. And I think that's the thing with social media is always kind of trying to stay abreast of what's happening, of what the young people are doing with it, I would say, because they're really the ones that are driving and driving the shift and how things are formulated. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, some of the big players, like the major retailers, they're paying attention and they're definitely at the cusp of it. So paying attention to big brands, it matters too. But I would say more the real people behind those devices is what matters more. Like, how are they engaging? What are they doing that's differently? Are they now consuming shorter videos? Are they now more interested in a specific topic than others? What are the trends that are being put out on these social media platforms that, and not just looking at the trend for its face value, but looking at it on a deeper level, almost like a, I would say maybe even from a sociological perspective and thinking what's the behavior? What's the reason that this is so popular right now? But I think it's challenging because not everybody has the resources to be able to do that on a regular basis. Yeah. But I say, you know, I think keeping it fun, but keeping it also informative and on brand, it matters. Because if you're a restaurant tour and you're just dancing on YouTube and, you know, does that really, or on TikTok, does that really make sense? So it kind of has to be something that makes sense for your brand. But I would think also that something that's fresh and right now. And I think the best way to do that is trial and error. I mean, you have to be willing to put yourself out there a little bit and maybe publish a few things that aren't going to do so great in order to be able to get to that point where you find what really works for your audience.
Yeah. Great. I want to finish up here with you, You're the host of the In the Business podcast and are the executive producer of the Latina Leadership podcast. And I've found that through doing this show, through, I don't know, what am I on, like 70 episodes that I've done so far, I learned so much talking to whole different people from different parts of the world of communications, media, PR, journalists, that it's been a really valuable tool because I find that as the interviewer, the great part about that is I don't have to know the answer to the question. So mm-hmm. I'm constantly learning things because I want to, you know, be curious and find out how people do things. So what are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned in hosting podcasts?
So we started out as bloggers initially. We had a blog in 2010. And so when we made the transition into podcasts, it was really because we had seen a shift in the industry. And so I think that people were no longer consuming the content the way they were. So where I referenced before, in the past, we had also done a lot of campaigns with different brands where we were, you know, hey, we're eating chicken or we're doing these different things. And it was very much like brand content that we were producing simultaneously while I was still doing the agency world and I was still, you know, developing my career in the marketing communications. We were still building also on this blog site. So I felt I kind of had both experiences. But I think when we really decided to build both of these podcasts, it was much more intentional from the perspective mm-hmm. of instead of us looking for brands to invest in what we were doing, we decided that we were going to invest in what we were doing. So we decided that from our business, from our agency side, we were going to, you know, use those resources, the revenue we were generating as a successful and award-winning agency, to invest in the projects that we cared about. So the In the Business podcast is a project that I cared about that I wanted to talk to other folks like as you shared, to get to learn, to continue learning, to meet people and to just gain different perspectives. Because I think one of the things we have found is that as minority business owners, there were a lot of mistakes we made at the beginning. So we were thinking like, if we can bring others to the table who can share their own experiences, be vulnerable, so that as a community we can learn from these conversations, that was really the goal. Yeah. And then the Latina Leadership Podcast was something that my wife wanted to do. She wanted to bring Latinas together, bring these iconic speakers like Ellen Ochoa, who was the first Latina in space. Wow, you know, make her story available to everybody on your platform of choice, and you know, wherever you want to listen, however you want to listen or watch it on video. And so it was really about kind of bridging that gap. Between those aspirational Latinas and those Latinas that had already achieved some level of success, and doing it in a way that was free and available to everybody. So I think it's taken a lot. For us, it has been taking ownership of the content that we put out and being very intentional about it.
Great, Juan. Well, with that, how can people follow what you're doing? What's the call to action here? How do people get more involved in what's happening over at Big Oak Tree Media in Houston, Texas?
Absolutely. So we're at bigoaktreemedia.com. That's our website, and we have links to all of our different platforms, the different things that we're doing, whether it's working on the agency side with clients. We work with all types of clients, from corporates to nonprofits. And so you can find information about how to get in contact with me at bigoaktreemedia.com. And then I think on the podcast side, you'll see the links to the podcast that we're doing. And we're always looking for interesting guests, folks who really want to pour into the community. And, you know, contribute to what we're building in terms of a place of empowerment, a place of a safe space for people to talk and communicate about the things they care about when it comes to business, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to personal development.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Juan, and hopefully we can talk to you again sometime down the road.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
PR 360 was produced by Todd Perry in partnership with Global Results Communications. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review wherever you get podcasts. Follow GRC on all socials at Global Results. Follow Todd on Twitter at Todd A. Perry. That's Todd with one D. Talk to you next week.